repeat as Justice Kennedy filed. My client, why was this submitted to the decision? And no decision to do that. Why is that the end of the story? It's not just a timing discussion.
What is the first case of the applications process?
Because what it is, it's
experts. Thank you. Thank Thank you. Well, the difficulty is that his associates were hard hit once the president had decided. But as I said, under this program, looking at this, he was concerned about his sisters trying to take care of his sisters. He wanted to stop them when people were
in the hospital.
Yes, but the fact that he suffered abuse, and not just from being exposed to this, but from his caregivers and their relatives as well, Tyler changes the situation completely. And that's one of the nice reports of ultimately for his process was, well, this is
Your Honor, I disagree that it's immaterial because it's immaterial. This is an applying of substance, and substance to sex bill more than 8 times. The panel emphasized the fact that substance was pro se.
What's first? And then the very smart lawyers.
Very smart lawyers.
Really smart lawyers. Yes, and you had more smart agents, more smart judges, and nobody said for 8 years, and certainly the state didn't know it did not want to dismiss the other ideas grants. And there was a problem or a coalition back on here. Nobody said it, especially the judges. Well, they didn't think so.
But the argument as briefed in the opening brief is that I had, as the respondent's attorney, I had an affirmative duty to tell Mr. Cassatt how to litigate his case and not have that duty.
How can I do this with a motion to dismiss a claim that is worth such a threat of litigation?
I filed my final motion to dismiss when I had what I believe is a final, completely exhausted petition.
What do you have to say about it?
I'm sorry?
What do you have to say about it? What was the motive? You didn't have it before.
We did have a mediation. But I also point out Rule 15 creates this many didn't create Rule 15.
But it's interpreted in a way that it was the issue of the Ninth Circuit. Decided that it seems pretty clear to me you have to get some sense of applying the George Bill.
Problem is that George analyzes the entire argument here on the scale of orders that we have in effect. This is intimate. Is that the argument relies on a philosophy that an endpoint is not intended to change the system practice? And we know that's not true. The purpose of an endpoint is to change rapidly existing habeas corpus practice.
Why
do you think that would have to
talk about it? I don't know if this lady is saying this. Just of course, when you have a very formal set of model motions and public insurance for the parents and just pro se, you have to do this motion and this, you're going to file this motion and you're going to file this motion and so on. Everybody has an understanding that you just described an understanding that the end of this petition, which is what I would say, is maybe it's an understanding about how most of the outbreaks in this area, whatever it is, it was an understanding that it was not a problem of the
difficulty with the argument is that William's reason is that the understanding or the skill of the order procedure that had been in effect prior to AMCA's enactment somehow overrides it, and the purpose of it helps to change practice on substitution.
The judge is essentially telling you to have more time to move seats. So that's just what it's looking at. Don't you know, do it our way, it'll be okay.
But then for my decisions, that person is so smart, some inconsistency that the school people doesn't know anything about law.
Well, how was the lawyer supposed to know that planning to, but he didn't know about that? Mainly, the teacher who went to sign the family, he just said it's either way. Didn't know about it. And he knew what Judge Carl was telling him, and what everybody agreed with Judge Lee. The battle was between lawyers and both lawyers and pro se, so what was he supposed to know?
He was supposed to know.
What he needed to that state could follow up the business, both in place and both in our terms, but didn't he?
He was supposed to know about the 1 year statute of limitations, and he was supposed to know that that statute overrode the pre-existing pre-ANFA schizophrenia paradigm that we had in Nevada. He was supposed to know about Rule 15 because these guys are highly successful.
He was supposed to know that the ultimate version of Rule 15 is behind the scenes. We couldn't have any other means.
Well, keep in mind that this court's Rule 15 made a decision to an extremely broad view of relation back. That view, I would suggest to you that it was not in compliance. So, going back in total with the same appeal in the same case, it's extraordinarily broad. This court, as I recall, had other non-habeas context Rule 15 decisions that did not take Rule 15 such broad horizons. And so based on those decisions, had the federal public defender done not a historical research on Ninth Circuit law framing Mange and Serkin, they would have found decisions that were much more narrow, much more similar to what the U.S. Supreme Court said it made. The U.S. Supreme Court's decision made was not unexpected. It wasn't radical. It just said the economy core effects. That's not a strange move, but let me have a cut here from the minister. One more point here. Do we have any questions? I'm sorry. 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 I' prior to being used as a class, everybody's assumption is the one that you actually call our position and use them as a theory. I can't say that because this court's main decision is much broader than this court's earlier non-medias case of main decisions.
What was the decision? What was the decision? Before now, the declaration had been moved to the rule of debauchery. That is, it was not the one that the Supreme Court had
initially endorsed. So, again, there was a very good reason for the Supreme Court. But I would suggest that the Supreme Court's common core of facts is not predictable based on Rule 15 of the statute. I don't think it raises the issue.
I think it's substantive. Occasionally, what you are understanding is that what the impact of this issue is on the seats specifically, in other words, which of the major claims would be within this problem if we thought it was a proportional and which one not. It's very confusing.
I do have a list of the claims in front of me. It's deprioritized, so I know it's a briefing as far as which claims will apply. But then it's been explained out specifically to the gross orders which claims you can take out based on statute of limitations.
Well, which you can take out. Well, first of all, one issue is to choose not to be based on the statute. But second of all, so I'm going to substantially on the major claims. Now we don't know what about the medication issue, what about the torture issue, what about the curious issue, what about the aggravated challenge issue, the various factors, which are in, which are out, don't have much to do with each other.
We don't think that as to three issues that were certified for the appeal, the aggravating circumstances issue on the right and lawful arrest, just how it merits to understand the court's orders from below, and argument number two, the issue of ineffective assistance, just to give case research and ineffective assistance, the failure to hire the expert to induct rape, challenge torture, or dealt with on the merits of those are the two claims, the two strict claims that were just for refuse to consider the new evidence that was submitted in 1993. If I go to that claim, that might answer some of your questions.
I thought you said something. It's a very important question, Judge Marshall, because it's a big task. So, my understanding of the case is that I'm going to use the claim number that I'm asserting on the plaintiffs. If there is one to see, and if I think it's struggle for failure to advise murder applications to the individual to support them, would that be wise if we were to agree with your opponent on this subject? The initial statements of police, claim 9 would be wise. Claim 14 would be wise. And I can see the claim 1J, which is much emphasis of California's 5 and 6, which is the key with the ballot because it's not voluntary. The 13 to 20, which is freeway boundary, could be wise, but there must be an exhaustion as well. Does that make sense?
I think I can do that. I think to answer your question by concurring with you, by looking at the proposed orders and I know of those two things for me right now, because we didn't bring the issues, that way my briefing followed, methodology was followed in the opening brief, but I agree that there were a handful of issues that were dealt with on the section of the petition, but those are far fewer than the issues that the court found to be procedurally default. But any issue that deals with the set of limitations that were just discussed. But the point is this, maybe it was procedurally defaulted, but then if there is that default is correct, that would be sufficient for explaining to you that there was some other kind of claim that I had from me. On the issue of the Ms. White's argument number two, the evidence regarding the claims, I apologize for this one being my chief W2, guilt-based research, so I'm not the expert. Just proceed, come down here. He did deal with those claims of merits. He did not deal with the evidence that was submitted by Crawford, by Simmons, in the final state court petition.
Just hold that. I think this is a pretty wrong, but I don't know The question is what? And this is before the court's vote time. Congress has a very good decision, which is reasonable and reasonable, right?
Yes.
It's not very usual as such.
Well, it's evidence for easy because there was a complaint in the Alien Brain of Williams was that there was evidence that was proffered to the state court in exhibits and it wasn't considered by the federal court. Because the judge, of course, if you're under Williams versus Taylor, Michael Williams versus Taylor, and the statute, you fail to file a claim to the state court, therefore, I mean, you cannot accept those claims.
Yes, if they teach you, then they throw it out at that point, so you're not going to look at the speculation.
Those claims.
Even for the purpose of deciding whether you have a colorable claim or not here.
Those claims were, they did not get a hearing out of the
state. They didn't have a hearing, but did they say that we're not having a hearing because they want to attach to this case to a hearing, or we're not having a hearing because we're not considering what you gave us for some procedural reason?
Well, the state position that I worked all the time on the state court petition was to also make all the other successive state court petitions.
Well, with that, I mean, it was bigger because it was under so many laws. It was involved in the case there at that certification.
There are two arguments that Mr. Williams raises as to why Judge Crowe's ruling on means of certain evidence was wrong. And the related issues, I can find out what is under Martinez and what is under Dickens.
But Dickens is Martinez.
Dickens is, exactly, Dickens is Martinez. So the question is, well, Judge Crowe ruled on this issue, and you are submitting to the court the Martinez issue that was raised in the motion for reconsideration. And what he essentially said was Martinez is a very narrow decision. It goes to the omissions or co-omissions of actions. It's a post-conviction case. And it's an omission by a second post-conviction counsel, the third, the fourth, and fifth, and the sixth. But that is relevant because...
Is that why the rule for a stopped clause?
I'm sorry?
Is that why the rule for a stopped clause?
But just for a rule was...
I don't know. I know. In terms of the state affections courts defaulted the attempts to introduce the record that had been introduced earlier. So therefore, if the culprit here is the first, the initial post-conviction counsel.
But the failure to develop the facts in that case also occurred not only in the first state court evidentiary hearing, but in the second state court evidentiary hearing. And there was no attempt to develop the facts there. And that was not the initial post-conviction counsel. I'm sorry. Second hearing was just the new evidence that they had garnered after the first one.
So I think it was the default of the brought in that the material that they then went right on.
There was an opportunity to get Mr. Williams at that point to present new evidence. And he did not present any of this evidence. He could have asked, he could have done a motion. He didn't do anything. It's the argument under Martinez is that these facts not only were not presented back in the early 1980s, these weren't presented for 25 years, and that was Judge Crowe's Martinez ruling that gives for that causal relationship.
I think it's more relevant to Judge Crowe's
But Dickens is Martinez, and that is
so. This strikes me as the Dickens case. What's your position on this term?
There has to be routine as we speak to these arguments, there has to be a causal relationship between first the initial cost of those things that they're going to do and the failure to follow those claims until 30 years later. And that's where Martinez analysis breaks down.
What was the second petition.
So that's the problem with this claim, that there was a state law, right? Even better than Martinez, it's a substantive right, as we read in the Supreme Court's decision. And there was a race in your proceeding where you could have been caught, but there was a substantive or procedural right under state or federal law to the effectiveness of post-employment counts. And I think that is where this entire argument breaks down. The major improvements of the Roberts and Roberts and Carter's U.S. litigation. Yes, I would love to address the litigation that is initially, I would point out, and perhaps would be supported to have a complete agreement with what the U.S. Supreme Court said on Judge Grossman. And I'm paraphrasing that the proffered mitigation evidence was no DB. It was more of a scene. Keep in mind that in the post-conviction hearing, Ms. Lee testified that she and another attorney went down to Los Angeles. They met with witness family. They were in his house. They were going through the neighborhood. They talked to very senior people there, even in declarations that were submitted many years later. And both the U.S. Supreme Court and the U.S. District Court looked at what was said and they looked at the hearing. The U.S. Supreme Court looked at the mediation case that was put on. That would point out was a unified instruction. I'm not aware that they looked at any records. But the declarations that were submitted and were proffered much later in the system were essentially more of the same of the state witness, of the same witnesses that did testify in the penalty based from the penal crime on this one. Yes, according to Judge Brody, that is the overlap is about 90%. That's why those two courts found that there was marginal benefit in the initial mediation case. In fact, mind if we were not talking about your ego, there were conflicts in the proffered mediation evidence that was suggested that was proffered 3 years later. The exact same witnesses that Williams subsequently been called, and there was essentially the same group of people. Those people were essentially at the throats of other witnesses that Williams testified, just that they've been called at the exact same hearing. It's what you would have had the entire mediation case put on through Williams 3 years later. It's a question they want to put on according to the National Court of Judge Brough in order to come in the mediation effort because the witnesses who were supposed to be called as mediation witnesses were the people who did the abuse and there have been these witnesses who are in conflict.
Did the lawyer have the information that is to say, I
all the time is when she testified in the hearing, they went down there, they interviewed most of these specific statements. Also, find something else out too.
So the answer is, we don't know or she didn't know what?
I think the answer is, we don't know beyond the testimony she gave at the hearing.
Which leads to the question, she didn't know what she was doing.
Well, the question was to raise the list of this record, raise the list for investigation. But you also have to look at the evidence she's getting from the family members. If you get family members to your 25 years to what they testified to, it's hardly fair to the state because they need 25 years to think about it and modify their individual testimony. The fact of the matter is that CAs with due process can sit in the seat with due process and assess the credibility of these witnesses themselves in the neighborhood where they live, so they can assess the neighborhood, talk to family members, and choose a reason for their opinion. And based on the comparison between the new mitigation evidence and the old mitigation evidence, 2 months ago, there's only a marginal benefit, and there was detriment had been gone, had Williams gone, to favor mitigation evidence. I termed the mitigation case trial as a mitigation case of redemption. That was well organized, it was thematic, it was organized in a very, very specific way. It wasn't just that he's a good guy, a bad neighbor. It's a lot more detailed than that. It's a guy who had all of God's gifts, and it was a guy who was trying to redeem himself again and again and again, going to college, through boxing, through his job program he was involved with. This is a guy who worked with councils trying to paint what's just as a good guy. It's much more, it's much more involved than it's more detailed. He's trying to paint a picture of a guy who's going to overcome all of these odds. That's why those two courts held that there was a conflict in the new mitigation proffer and a kind of marginality, a marginal benefit of the new evidence that had been proffered. Two images and comments from me on the already offered on Saturday in circumstance that was briefed on the merit stats, issue 3 in brief. So be happy to address them if you want to hear them.
Torture is the, if you look at the
common place, long-experience torture, or to investors as being touched by unnecessary pain. Again, keep in mind, there's no justifying the fact that the Supreme
Court can issue statements that even necessary pain works, and to the end, in other words, there's a course of evaluation that generates some communication or information or something.
That is not how this being post-release decision, and in this time, we didn't have the benefit of applying Judge Code and the benefit of the community and the benefit of those later cases. Again, there's an additional wrinkle with this issue because this was not a jury determination. These were three judges. There's a substantial presumption that judges know the law and apply the law correctly. They did not find. We ran into a problem when I did the first one to get here, and it's to show that a pretty American thing. The judges said that we find depravity or torture. I have a real problem here today because we found, but they did find out that they were torture. And depravity, which means that they found torture, and the depravity part of that is thrown out because, you know, the flaw is so negative to aggregators are fading. No court has ever held that torture is just as just the courts have ever held that torture is an invalid aggregator.
So that's your advice, but I would challenge the conclusion that the Nevada Supreme Court on the merits threw out to the aggregators that was done within the context of procedural default. I have seen that Mr. Williams opening three makes the same, makes the allegations that he won on that issue. My reading of both of the Nevada Supreme Court is that he did not win on that issue because that was a procedural void.
cause and prejudice. And what the ruling did was ruling found that the defendant's claims did not overcome the procedural default. There is no ruling. It's not read in the orders of the past Supreme Court. There is no ruling invalidating two of the aggregators in the difference of status in the open race defendant.
Or an occasional ruling on the merits versus the first appearances in this charge.
this final claim is required in the direct appeal. I find that in our time of conscious and the entire situation, I find that in our long period of evidence to the cell, and then at the age of the cell, about age 2,000, that would be part of, as Mr. Presetta told you, that would be part of the mandatory review process of the account of reasoning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.